Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So hello and welcome to Get It Off Your Breasts with myself, Leanna Bird.
And me, Emma Gannon.
We are delighted to be joined this week by the one and only Connie Huck, and we'll be talking about parent top trumps, generational labels and women with successful partners and how they're treated by the media. So Connie, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you with us this week.
Very excited to have you on.
I'm very excited to be here. Hooray.
It's all the more exciting because this is the first week. My youngest child is in nursery, so it's like the first week of freedom.
So is this like your return back into
this is sort of like my return to your other life. To adult conversation that doesn't involve Peppa Pig and there's no children running around in the background. This is literally...
Couldn't be more perfect timing.
Yeah, this is the first week of him doing full day.
If you want me to start like throwing a tantrum mid-podcast just to make you feel a bit more familiar surroundings, we can do that.
Good. So that will ground me. So yeah, it's a bit weird. There's no appendages of children. But it's great. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. And as ever, we always invite our guests to get something off their breasts first, because we're polite like
There's
that.
There's a lot of stuff on my breasts. I don't know where to start.
This you must like have literally some stuff stacked bottled up
to the ceiling. So I'll just delve into what's on the top of my breasts currently.
Go for it.
Like literally, I've just come straight from the doctor's. Because my eldest child... Oh, no, I'm not going to turn this all about children, am I? I've just escaped from children already, my first subject.
It's transitional. Yeah, You've got to bridge it.
Yeah, so. Exactly. You're right. It's all part of the therapy. No. So basically, my eldest child didn't sleep at all last night because he's got some sort of willy infection. And his willy kept hurting. And he kept waking up and needing to go to the loo. So I've been up all night. I'm sleep deprived. And my husband has too. And then this morning, when we had to get up to do the school run, etc., and take the child that was up all night to the doctors to get the antibiotics, we had what I call the sleep off, which I sort of haven't had for ages since they were babies. But I think all parents that have got young kids will know, where you sort of play sleep top trumps of who's had less sleep. And you're like, I went to bed at 11 o'clock. Well, I didn't fall asleep till 5 a.m. Well, at 5 a.m. I was already awake from my half an hour. Because you're up all night because of the kids, especially when you have a baby. And we're sort of coming out of that neck of the woods now. But it just reminded me of, going back there. I always thought I'd have three kids. I'm one of three. And now that they're both sort of sleeping through touch wood, apart from when they have willy infections, there's some wood. I'm touching it. That's the sound effect of me touching wood. And then I had two, and I'm sort of sleep. They're sleeping now and stuff, and I'm like, I'm done. I think number three is game over. Anyway, so yeah, sleep deprivation is my topic. There was a thing in the papers, wasn't there, at the weekend about sleep and how we all need lots of it. And I'm like, none of my parent friends get any sleep.
I was just wondering, because that seems like between couples, and actually... It's not just parents that do it, because I do it with my partner too.
Do you?
Who's had the least sleep, who needs to make the tea in the morning and things
like
that.
Exactly.
But I was wondering, do you find amongst parents that actually you do that between other parents as well? So like other mums and dads who you're mates with or at the school gates to kind of almost as a badge of honour of like, oh God, I've had 2 hours sleep this week. And well, I've had half an hour sleep this week. I had negative sleep.
It's funny. There is this thing of, and especially with certain parents of like, this, like who's more stressed or who's got more to do. And but it's certain people. Some people, so there's two types of parents. There's those that where everything is perfect. Look at the Instagram photos or whatever. And then there's the other type that is just, like, oh, and then I had to do this, which now I've painted myself as that type because I've already complained to you about my sleep. But I'm not. Really, my life is perfect.
It's like the Margaret Thatcher thing of like, she had 4 hours and look what she achieved. It's like, oh, that's not really something I want to sort of aspire to be like.
Yeah,
But exactly. I have a question because obviously, I don't have children, but, in the future, that's something that I would like to do. Mm-hmm. But sleep is
so important to me. And I know it's important to everyone. And I know everyone probably thought before they had kids, oh my God, I love my sleep. But I get like anxiety over how many hours sleep I'm going
to
get.
I'm like, I need
8 hours.
I used to be you.
I used to be like, if I haven't had 8 hours, I'm not going to be myself. Yeah. What a privileged position to be in, to be like, I'm going to get 8 hours. But
and does it get easier? Do you feel if you don't get 8 hours, that, oh no, I'm not my full person today?
Yeah, and I bet there's so many people rolling their eyes at me now, like, oh, 8 hours, like, enjoy it while it lasts. Does it get easier?
I'm like,
can I have some practical tips, please?
No, you know what? You just, it's a baptism of fire. It's the best kept secret, I think. Because I think before I went into parenthood, I was like, how difficult can it be? There's people that have 5 kids, there's teenage mothers, there's people that live at the top of a tower block where the lifts are broken that have to get a double buggy up there. You know, there's people that have triplets. There's people in India working in the fields with kids strapped to their backs. Everyone has kids. It'll be a dozzle. And I have to say, the sleep thing is almost the biggest kept secret. You do go through this phase where you're like, will I ever sleep again? Oh my gosh. Because sleep deprivation is a form of torture. We all know that.
It really isn't. So you mentioned a study that came out.
Yes.
And this was incredible. I don't know if you read it too.
Longer life, longer sleep.
Well, this, so it was, there was a big old article as well about it. There's he's head of neuroscience and psychology at the University of California. And he's been doing this study into sleep. It's called Dr. Matthew Walker. For some time now, and the results were incredible. So not only has he linked sleep to dementia and Alzheimer's and cancer and
lack of sleep,
so how much you can correlate how much sleep you get with how likely you are of developing these kinds of issues later in life.
So scary.
But he has a really interesting point of view on it. So it was what you were saying there about Margaret Thatcher, you know, and I've heard that about Obama as well. Like, well, he has 5 hours sleep, gets up, does a workout, and it's kind of seen as
rules the
really,
world.
Yeah, and like really impressive, right? And like you kind of are in awe of people who can function on small sleep. Whereas someone who, you know, says, well, I sleep 9 hours a night, or I'm going to go and have an afternoon nap, or even as I've done in the past, like I can't come to that 7:30 meeting because it will mean I won't have enough sleep. I'll meet you at 9.
Yeah.
You're kind of seen as lazy. And it, what he was saying, which is really interesting, was you don't say, oh, look at that lazy baby having all that sleep, because you get that sleep is necessary for their development and functioning. It's essential, right? It's you know, it's needed for their body, their brain, everything.
Yeah.
And we should be seeing adults like that too. And that 8 hours that you were saying, am I spoiled for having 8 hours? No. And actually,
you're
like,
responsible. Yeah.
Well, it's like a
med. But you should never make a decision. Like, I mean, when sometimes you like are moaning about something and one of your friends or family, they say, go to sleep,
mm-hmm.
and you will wake up in the morning and feel different. And you always do.
But his whole point is that it should be almost seen like medicine, and that it's
like
as important as exercise. He's like, you know, if you're going to go, I go to the gym every week and this and that, see sleep as work in the same way, like getting 8 hours of sleep is work. It's
so
important.
Just to play devil's advocate though, like what if, like with Connie's situation when you've got a newborn or whatever, or even just a child who has an infection, like what happens when you can't get sleep?
This is, do you know what? So I do another podcast called Geek Chic's Weird Science, which is much more sort of science-y based. And I really want to get the Dr. Matthew Walker on it to do a sleep special. And that was my question. I was going to exactly that say, this is all, because he goes, you know, his thing is he gets 8 hours every night. He will not go without.
That's you.
I want to say to him, well, what do you do in those situations? I guess trying to nap. But the problem is, like if and when you can, but the problem is you need 90 minutes of sleep to get to your deep sleep, which is actually the kind of restorative
That's
sleep.
That's right, the REM.
So, yeah, and then you need 4 or 5 of those cycles in a row to really get the work done.
Apparently, so if you have a 4 hour sleep cycle, it means that if you wake up after 4 hours, you feel fine. If you wake up after 8 hours, you feel fine. If you wake up after 12 hours, you feel fine. But if you wake up after 6, then it's that thing of where you're waking up and you've got a dream that you half remember and you haven't finished your full sleep cycle, so you feel awful. So maybe, Emma, you could be a 4 hour sleep cycle girl that's waking up after 8 hours. I'm just throwing it out there.
Is in the olden days that I've got where it gently wakes you up during a cycle, and so actually it might be better that I wake up at 7:12 a.m. rather than 10 a.m. because actually I'll be more groggy.
I think that's true.
It all really interesting, but I just think, what if I'm getting myself into this amazing sleep situation, and then when I do have kids, I'm actually making myself worse because I'm taking away from that routine?
You know what we need to do is change the mindset of the nation. So if someone says, oh, I'm eating healthily, I won't have that. You're right. You sort of revere them. And not revere them, but you respect them. It's like what you were saying about going to the gym.
It's a commitment, right?
Yeah, and really we should like say, wow, Emma, that's really cool. If she says she wants to go for a nap, people should facilitate that. They have siestas.
Naps at work as well. Yeah. Nap rooms.
Because actually that will mean more productive work. We just need to change the mindset of people to think it's like healthy eating or doing exercise.
Oh, yeah, because like have you heard of that thing called clean sleeping?
No, what's that?
It's the new clean eating.
Is it?
What is clean sleeping?
I mean, I've got to admit, I read the headline and I didn't actually read it, so. Okay, but it's like a Gwyneth Paltrow thing.
Okay.
But yeah, I admitted recently when I did this talk at this worky thing that I get up at like between 9:30 and 10 a.m. Like I get up really late, but I work to like maybe 7.
See, that's fun.
And loads of people were like, "Oh my god!" Like, but I was judged.
But again, you're being judged for that, and I think you should be congratulated for managing to get. I mean, obviously, it's a privileged position to be able to sleep in a bit later. But some people will go to bed earlier because they have to get up at 6 in the morning. Then they'll make sure they go to bed at 10 at night. But I think
my neighbour
is a butcher, and he literally goes to bed at like 7 or 8 at night because he has to wake up really early to go to the meat market in the East End in the morning. And so you're kind of no different from that. You're working later to compensate for the fact that you're sleeping later. And I think that's good. My husband, he often writes at night and will wake up because at night it's really easy to write without distractions.
I feel like that. Like
and sometimes
the world is asleep and you're awake.
You don't have to check Twitter or go and make a cup of tea.
My friend calls it the midnight boom. In fact, she called her album that, but it's the midnight boom is when you sort of get to around midnight and suddenly you feel your brain wake up and you have your best work. And then some people, like night owls, are just like that, and they will, you know, want to be awake and working and productive late at night and sleep in late. And some people are larks and they'll get up early and they'll, you know, be up at 6 doing amazing work and getting productive and sorting their house out and everything else. So we are genetically programmed differently as well. Can I tell you a scary stat?
Yeah. Yes, scare us.
Because I told our producer Shona this before and we were both like, ah! This is from this study that Dr. Walker just produced. They had a little kind of mini facts bit attached to it, which horrified me. It said, an adult who sleeps only 6¾ hours a night, which I actually think is nearly 7 hours. It's quite good, right?
Not bad.
Would be predicted to live only to their early 60s without medical intervention.
Mm. What?
Yeah. Thank goodness for medicine, everyone.
What, so every night, it's saying?
Yeah. And then it says, if you drive a car when you've had less than 5 hours sleep, you're 4.5 times more likely to have a crash. If you drive after having had just 4 hours sleep, you are 11.5 times more likely to be involved in an accident.
I drove here today and my child was up all night.
I find that scary. And also, as an athlete, if you have anything less than 8 hours sleep as an athlete, your ability to reach your physical... You reach your physical exhaustion when you're doing your workouts. It drops by 10-30%.
Do you know what? That is why I'm not an athlete. But I'd be a brilliant athlete, but I can't do the sleep thing to get to my prime peak.
I think that's less than 7 hours. That is dying terrifying. In your 60s. I mean, obviously you're not guaranteed to die in your 60s, but that is shocking, isn't it?
Yeah. I just think the thing with that, though, is I'm just going to say it. We're talking about sleep shaming. Yeah. That's quite sleep shaming, that study. Like, but isn't it? It's going the other way. It's telling people off for not having enough. And if I'm worried about my sleep, I'm not going to sleep at all.
Yeah, but the only difference
that's
is...
That's the worst, isn't it?
When you set your alarm and you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he said that actually. He said, because he was like, I make sure I go to bed every night at the same time and wake up. He said, I set an alarm to go to bed, not to wake up.
But the hardest...
And he says also, if you need to wake up with an alarm, you've not had enough sleep. You should wake up naturally. But...
That's breaking the sleep cycle. Yeah. To use an alarm. You have to come to the natural.
But the difference is, you can say that's sleep shaming, but it's a scientific study, so it's a fact. And I know, obviously,
it's like shaming in the same way as saying you're eating 57 Mars bars, shame on you, in a weird way. So,
well, it's not shame on you, but it's like, you may die earlier than someone, doesn't it? Those Mars bars, heads up, do what you like.
Yes, that's true.
This is why Leanne is the sciencey one.
Well, no, but it's like, I think the thing is, don't judge anyone who has 6 hours sleep. Like, they could be a parent, a busy person, like, whatever else, you know, they could be an incredible person, and respect for them for managing to function in a way that I can't. But heads up, you might be doing your body damage and your brain damage. And just as long as we're aware of that.
Might die early, listeners. Well, just get some sleep. No, you know what, though? Difficult. In the olden days, they used to sleep in two blocks of 4 hours and wake up in the dead of the night and do stuff.
Really?
And so we only sleep according to what society dictates, really.
Yeah.
And society dictates that most jobs are 9 to 5. And so actually, Emma, you carry on getting up late and working.
I do just have an afternoon nap as well. Because some
of you are coming out now.
Sorry to rub it in. No, but I at the moment I'm working on a book which I need to work really hard on it, and I do work hard, but my brain has to be engaged in a certain way. Mm. And so if I need an afternoon nap to give myself a second wind.
But this is responsible sleep. This is good. I think fine. I think sleep 12 hours if it means you're more productive in the time that you're awake and you're doing what you need to do properly and not causing car crashes.
Maybe this is maybe you've answered your question about when you're a parent. Maybe you're banking so much sleep now that by the time you're sleep exhausted, you'll have so much in the bank.
The phrase catch up on sleep, that is true, isn't it? Because you can go away and catch up on it. But I don't know. I what about though the people that say you're missing out by sleeping, you're not living?
No, because dreaming's amazing, isn't it? I love dreaming.
You see, dreaming is amazing, but then I always think, right, so I'm teetotal. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're teetotal. But if you dream and then you can't remember the amazing dream, it's like it never even happened. So it's like people that go, oh, I had such a great night, I was so pissed last night, it's brilliant, but then you can't actually remember the brilliance.
Yeah, but then when you're dreaming, you're not remembering your awake life, so, you know, so who's to say which one's better zone?
But it's something that's good in the moment, as good as something that's good that you remember afterwards. Oh my gosh, we're going off at a tangent. Well,
can I ask you a question, though? Just kind of back to what you were saying about you and your husband doing the whole, like, I
sleep
left.
Top trumps.
Do you think you do the top trumps with each other because you want the other one to maybe take over some kind of either parenting duty or chore? Or,
yes.
Or do you do it because you're kind of like going, look at me, I've had less sleep than you and you're not suffering as much as me, kind of thing? Is
both.
It that competitive?
Both. It's both, yeah. It's twofold. Yeah, I mean, as a parent, you kind of do top trumps over everything, nappy changing top trumps. I changed the last 10 nappies or whatever, but as I say, I'm sort of coming out of that neck of the woods now. So yeah, I could be napping now, but I'm doing adult conversation.
Do you also, with the top trumps thing, and I'm guessing this is why a partnership and a marriage is so great, when you can kind of shift things around and each do bits, but does it go in waves when, like, you've got something really crazily busy on at work, and then if he's like mentally busy, like, do you sort of, does the
really,
sleep change?
You also have work top trumps as well, where you're like, yes, but you can do that thing later, I have to go, and I don't know, Leanna and Emma are waiting. So today he had to, so we were waiting for this prescription to come at the doctor's to see who, like, if it was quick, because I drive, if it came quickly then I could quickly drop my son back to school and do all that, but then if it did, and then he could go into work, but then if it took ages then I'd come here, you know. So it's sort of juggling, like, almost whose work is more important or more maneuverable. So if he's writing and then I do a podcast and I'm doing the podcast, then sometimes he'll write in the night so he can watch the little one, although the little one's in nursery now, this is before he's in nursery, while I can do the podcast. So it's all sort of a juggling act as well.
But that's the key, isn't it?
It's like Tetris.
But then I think it's everything top trumps in life. So before you have kids, like, I don't know, going into it and people are like, I'm really hungover, oh, I'm really, you know, you're always, people are just, it's another form of
kids. It's that classic Monty Python joke, though, isn't it? And it's the sketch and he's going, I grew up in poverty. And and he's like, I grew up, and it ends up, I grew up in a matchbox. And
we
was
ate coals.
And they set me on fire every day, yeah.
So I'm really interested in this sort of, like, the flip side of the way we're going and actually how social status, like, culturally is actually going to be more the less that you do. So, like, I got an out of office the other day from someone who was like, I'm out of the office, I only check my emails on a Thursday afternoon, if you need me and if it's urgent, call me. And I was like, oh, that's interesting, because that's basically the opposite. That's saying I'm not available.
Yeah, and apart from this small window.
But that person's read a book called The 4-Hour Week. because there's a really famous book by this guy.
Tim Ferriss.
Yeah, and it's basically like, I think he's like a multimillionaire now, and he's basically manoeuvred his life to make it so that he will work a 4-hour week, or so he says. But anyway, and a lot of that is from getting automation. And he said, he started at the beginning by going, I'll only check my emails for 1 hour of the day, and then the rest of the time it's an automated response saying, I will only respond for this. And he's managed to get that down to once a week on a Thursday afternoon or whatever it might be, and now he says he's got it down, everything's so automated it's down to once a month. So he's nailed it. So
he's getting 12 hours sleep.
I reckon this guy yeah, he's nailing his sleep.
So that guy's just in bed like sleeping, and then Thursday afternoon he opens his laptop.
He's so productive for 4 hours and then he just sleeps the rest
I read a bit of it and it's a lot to do with like how to automate your life basically, and how to learn what to spend money on, because when is spending money on something more important than your time, and when is vice versa. So it is quite clever, but obviously not everyone can do that. Like, you can't be a doctor and do a 4-hour week, unfortunately. You can't automate that, and you know, you can't be a cleaner and do a 4-hour week because you couldn't live on it, and you can't automate that. So
he
writes books and lectures, and he's like the king of how to.
He's
the king of how to
never get published. He's full of it. That, but again,
there was a good tip, Emma, for you writing your book. So his one chapter is about how if you've got knowledge, if you're an expert in something, writing a book's a good way to make some money, and then continue to then be an expert and do talks and things like that, and make relatively good money for not too many hours. And one of his things for writing the book was that he said he transcribes it all, so he just says it all and then sends it off and will pay someone to type it out, because with that, those hours he would have done typing it, he could be earning more money doing a temp job, for example.
No, it's so true. Yes. You need to bring out some sort of book where you can, well, you probably can, you can go and do talks.
Emma does lots of talks,
yeah. Yeah, so there you go. That's like a lot of the people that I interview for the podcast, I do a podcast for Penguin Books, they all do TED Talks. But they're all, you know, you find a sort of conference, like, I don't know, the Chartered Accountants Annual Conference or whatever, and you can get just paid heaps just to do a talk on your specialist subject for. Mm. Is that Emma's already doing that?
She's so like, this was his tip, like become an expert in something and then just rinse it. But again, like, so I think the person you emailed has read his book.
Yes,
and they're taking tips.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that it was like the opposite of like, I'm so busy, I'm so frantic, I'm running around like a headless chicken. It was like, actually, you can't contact me, I'm afraid. And I was like, ooh.
Is that like what you can't have? You're like, oh no, I really want to work with this person because they're so unavailable.
Yeah, I might try it out of office. Not available. But if you really want me, text this number.
Yeah.
Isn't it like Bill Murray, who only has a phone in his house and he just answers it and agents ring him and he just like says yes or no?
Jack White doesn't have a mobile phone either. He uses answer machine. But then
that's going to be the new having a mobile phone, not having one, isn't
it?
Didn't
Ed Sheeran recently get rid of his too, I think?
Yeah, there was something about that. You know what?
It's very trendy to have a phone.
I have to say, I switched off my voicemail and it's liberating. Because do you have voicemail?
Oh, I turned mine off years ago.
High level anxiety when I get a voicemail. And it's only my dad saying something.
Well, that's the thing. Most people, it's quite archaic to have voicemail these days, isn't it? I mean, basically, you get 10 messages and then your voice box is full. And then if someone's saying an address or something, you have to shift through to listen to the saved message of the address. If people text you, it's just so much.
I think I'm going to be in the beginning of that film, Scream. Every time I listen to a voicemail, I'm like, I'm going
to
die.
So I used to have my voicemail on, and mine didn't stop at 10 messages, and I wouldn't bother dialing in for a week.
And then it
would
say,
no, I would ring it and it would go, you have 52 messages.
Really?
I'd literally have a panic and I'd feel so much anxiety, but I turned it off now. And then it's like, if they really want you, they'll text you. Or you see like 15 missed calls from a weird number and you'll call them back at some point.
Do you have lots of notifications on your phone?
Yeah, my friend is horrified, looks at my email and she was like, you've got 3,000 unread emails.
I don't know why, but I thought, sorry.
No,
you're very productive and very good, but I just thought maybe you wouldn't mind having notifications. Because you're quite easygoing.
I try and turn as many of the notifications off as I can.
It is a bit annoying, isn't it? And then you bing, 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 and you say, oh, I've got a text from someone. And often on mine, it's like games my kids have put on my phone. And it's like, you have 5 new credits on Jumping Jack or whatever the game is called. It's like,
thanks.
I know. So annoying.
One of the ones I wanted to get off my breast was this idea of really, really judging the younger generations for being tech-obsessed, narcissistic, selfie-obsessed. And the word snowflake, which means fragile, and they think they're really special and really unique and really entitled, really demanding. And that's sort of a label that millennials have got a lot more than any other generation. And looking at this chart that I have on my phone to do with generational divides, so you've got the baby boomers who have gone through a lot of things. Like, they've had the highest divorce rate ever, and the most amount of second marriages.
But they're in the position to do that.
But more than maybe even their parents as well.
More than their parents.
But then it was more shunned in their parents' generation. So when I was at school, if someone's parents got divorced, it was like, oh, blah, blah's parents are getting divorced. It was like a sort of still a thing. Whereas now it's like, yeah, whatever. Mm.
Yeah, so it was shocking for them. They're the post-war babies. So they obviously grew up like having their parents actually living through a war. Like, that's something that obviously was not great. And also it says here, this is quite American, but they were sold this like American dream that basically you can sort of have it all. And then you've got Generation X, who have gone through sort of...
Well, these are 38 to 51-year-olds. Oh, no, yeah, that's the range. So Connie, you're a Generation Xer.
I'm an Xer. You just missed it.
I just missed it.
What are you? You're a Generation Y.
I'm a millennial. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I'm on the very top end of it, so I'm actually an Xennial, which kind of bridges the two. But baby boomers are like 52 to 71.
What's
year olds
Generation Y then?
So Generation Y is the same as millennials. Okay.
23 to 37-year-olds.
So you're Generation Y.
Yeah, just.
Yeah. But Generation X is interesting. They're the first generation that didn't do as well as their parents, because baby boomers obviously did really clean up with like the housing market, and they like property is owned by mostly baby boomers still now. And then you've got millennials who have grown up with that digital media, digital generation,
because
much more sheltered than their parents.
They're sort of a product of the environment. So basically, they could get on the housing ladder because the situation was such that mortgages at that time were 3.5 times an income, and prices were low enough that it was attainable. So it's impossible for, if they were the same person now earning the same equivalent salary, just because of the environment they're in. So in a weird way, like, if people are thinking that millennials are sort of these people that just indulge themselves and their egos, narcissists or whatever, they're also to some extent a product of a society in which you can sort of just vlog and you can indulge in yourself, because baby boomers didn't have the ability to do that. In a weird way, it's quite harsh on the actual people, because you only are sort of what you can be according to your surroundings.
Exactly. It's true. And that's why I think it's really pointless to sort of put people in categories and like play each other off against each other, because actually we all grow up with it's all relative, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like, people are saying millennials have got it all, they're snowflakes, like they bang on about how anxious they are all the time. But I just think we're in this really incredibly interesting time where we've actually got two generations of people where, you know, my parents got their first iPad when they were, I don't know, in their 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've grown up all my life with technology. That's a massive divide between generations. But then obviously baby boomers have a massive divide with their parents, because if your parents were in a war and you grew up with, you know, maybe quite you were able to buy a house and you actually got quite a lot of money from the housing market, like, that's a huge divide. I just think there's massive divides, but we all need to work together and not sort of just like...
I totally agree. And we're three different categories between us.
Yeah, so Connie, you're Generation X.
Yeah, I'm Generation X.
I'm a Generation Y, but I'm actually... I'm across... I'm a millennial, but I'm an Xennial, because... Unlike Emma, although I'm a millennial, I'm on such at the top end that I was like 18 before I got a mobile phone. So I didn't actually grow. I had my youth without any kind of technology. Whereas you, what must have been like 11, 12? Yeah. So it's
Then my niece and nephews are they're Gen Z. I'm guessing they might even be like
six. Are they newer. 16 to 22? Is Gen Z?
Oh no, they're younger than that.
Wow, let's give them a label. Let's coin the label. Let's do it now. Cool. We'll get it in the Oxford Dictionary.
Gen ABCs, because they're so young.
I'm sure it's already got one.
I'm sure. But again, is it weird, because are you taking away this whole idea of people as individuals by sort of clumping them into a box and saying, and not only saying, okay, this is your environment and conditions like that you've grown up with, like you just said there, but, you know, I've heard Gen Zs being called lazy, for example, and privileged and ungrateful, you know, and actually sort of putting these kind of quite negative labels on them as well. And there was actually,
they might be all that, but they won't get on the housing ladder.
Well, they've got, so I mean, they've got some pretty tough, you know, conditions ahead of them as well.
There's ups and there's pluses and minuses.
And they're the first generation who are going to be worse off than their parents were as well. So every generation usually becomes a little bit better off than their parents, but not now.
Mm. Also, on the millennials thing as well, like, you know, the whole kind of, oh, you know, you've had it good and you haven't had anything bad happen to you as a generation, really, when you think of, like, the wars and all the rest of it. Actually, when you look at it, millennials have grown up with, like, being really young when 9/11 happened, really young when the London bombings happened, and pretty much all of their 20s have been to do with terrorism in the news. And I wonder if, like, calling people snowflakes and saying, oh, pull your socks up, other generations had it worse than you, is kind of missing the point a bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think the whole label snowflake is really unhelpful, because it basically takes away anyone's right to have an opinion on something that's either offensive or not. And I think it's a kind of lazy label that you use to shut someone down in a conversation rather than actually engaging with them and listening to their point of view. And yeah, maybe they are being oversensitive, but then say, I think you're being oversensitive in this issue. Like, name calling is never a particularly productive way to argue.
Also, the workplace is changing so much that I think the snowflake thing also comes from millennials being known for asking for, like, a pay rise after a year, or leaving their job to go and start their own business, or I think as a generation they are quite like, don't want to do it that way. Actually,
there was a really interesting talk. So it was like an interview with this guy, I can't remember who it was. He was a really fantastic speaker. I think he worked in the business world. Simon Sinek. Did you watch it?
Yeah.
And he was talking about how we view millennials in the workplace and how we like to kind of put them down and say they're lazy, they're this, they're open. And actually, it's our fault. It's the generation above, because they've been raised by their parents to be told, you are the centre of the world. You know, you are the little prince, the little princess. You can do anything with your life. Don't worry about failing at school, because it's the taking part that counts, and all these kinds of messages. And then suddenly they leave the kind of, like, safe bubble of family and school and all the rest of it. And you expect them to be, like, hardened and to be able to take the knocks and to be able to just fit into an environment which is much tougher, and they haven't been prepared in the same way that, say, like, maybe a baby boomer was, whose parents, like you said, grew up in the war, who will have taught them some quite tough lessons and perhaps not treated their children as centre of the universe in a way we kind of have a tendency to do now, I think. Connie, I don't know if you
No, totally. I mean, I remember just growing up and just silly things like, now you have to have a car seat for your child until they're, like, I don't know, 12 years old or something, or 5 foot or something ridiculous. And I just remember us being kids, being bundled into the back seat of our car and, like, going around corners, and you just slide from one side of the
playing
seat
corners
to the other.
Yeah.
And just but we just now, I think, how society is, everything's so structured and broken down, it's so fragmented that everything is labeled. You sort of had, I don't know, modernism, and then you had postmodernism, and now it's just almost like chaos, so you have to put everything in little boxes.
Don't you find with labels it helps the person doing the labeling more than it helps the person being labeled often? So, you know what you were talking about being diagnosed, like, I can definitely see that there might be times when it would help, because if you are, for example, diagnosed with some form of autism, maybe that can help you access different medical but also it can be unhelpful, because it can feel that you've been, you know, boxed,
segregated,
and I wonder whether the person who's being labeled is, it's not as helpful, whereas for, like, the doctors to understand how to deal with them, that it's helpful for them to have those labels. But I don't know, I think
I've got friends who definitely think labels to do with any sort of mental health stuff's really good, because not knowing what is going on can be, like, the most stressful and horrible time, because the minute someone says, you know, you've got OCD, actually, that's what it is, and we can help it, rather than,
this is a character,
what am I doing?
So I think also with labels, though, what's interesting is that sometimes what we actually perceive to be, you know, part of, for example, a generational trait, like, you know, narcissistic or selfish or lazy, whatever else, or strong and, you know, independent, actually can be the opposite to what it really is. There was a really interesting little sort of mini documentary on Newsbeat, and it was talking about Gen Z, And they said that older people tend to see Gen Z, so that's like 16 to 22 year olds, as lazy, and as they thought that their priorities in life would be things like social media and celebrity, so like being famous and being online. And actually they did a survey with, I think it was over 1,000 Gen Zs, and they found their priorities were actually family, partners and education. So what we look at a generation and see is not necessarily even what's really going on, and perhaps that's throughout all these different generations, all these different labels, you know, how that much of it is really true.
That is like the best example of this, like that sums it up, I think, of also, waggling a finger at another generation when you don't know until you're
and
in
you
their
see
shoes.
It through your generation's eyes. So you might think, well, they're all technology obsessed, but you're seeing it through your eyes of someone that's maybe grown up with not as much technology. So it seems just because they're on an iPad or a phone or they're obsessed, whereas that's just the equivalent of, I don't know, you reading a book or whatever it was that you grew up doing.
Yeah, they might be like doing their banking or like revising for an exam. Like,
exactly.
Or they could just be playing Candy Crush. But I just think it's interesting that, there's so much judgment flying around. I think you can't say the whole, like, in my day it was like this. Like, well, we're not there now. Like, we have to look forward.
Mm.
That felt good to get that off my breast.
So what I wanted to talk about today, what I wanted to get off my breast, was I suppose to do with gender in a way, but also to do with relationships and the way the media, I think, treat female partners of powerful or famous people in a very different light, in a very different way to male partners. So this kind of, the sort of whole thought and the thread of thought came from a Twitter exchange I had with Boy George, which is quite unexpected. Someone had tweeted saying, yep, the American dream standard has dropped. You can now go from East Block stripper to First Lady. So they were having a dig at Melania Trump, obviously, and looking at her past and her modelling, etc., mm-hmm. which is quite a low blow, I think, anyway, which is, you know, the route I'd advocate. But Boy George quite nicely stood up for her and said, you know, attacking someone about their past, not sure about that, judge lest they be judged and all that. Agree.
Mm-hmm.
But then he said, isn't her path sort of inspirational? So I responded and genuinely did not expect him to even read it because he had so many thoughts. And I said, well, it may have been more inspirational if her rise hadn't been via marrying a rich and powerful man. And he responded and said, well, so it's okay to marry a rich, successful man or woman if you're already rich. We all will use what we have. Beauty often marries money. And I kind of felt like he missed my point, because my point was actually not that, you know, oh, well, because she's come from a broke background, it's not great that she's married someone rich. That was nothing to do with that. Well, I think what I find strange, and I've seen this, it's not just Boy George, I've seen this quite a few times, is people kind of congratulating women who've married up, in a way, and married someone rich and powerful and gone like, hasn't she done well? And it's, you know, Melania Trump is an example of that, right? She's come from a poor background and, you know, now she's in the White House, which, you know, fine. But if she was someone who had worked her ass off or like done something incredible and managed to crawl her own way up, and not by attaching herself to someone who is rich and famous, because, you know, probably partly because she's, you know, beautiful to look at and he was very attracted to her, I see that as much more inspirational to young girls and young women. And I think, like, you would never talk about a man that way. So, like, Theresa May's husband, for example, because she's obviously a female leader of this country, like, do the View know much about him?
No.
I don't even think I know his name.
That's the thing, because he's not sort of going to be in, I don't know, the Daily Mail online or something, where, because no matter how you look at it, yeah, things have progressed. But women are always in the media. You know, it's always like, what are they wearing? And men more so than before. But let's face it, it's still not equal, is it? I mean, and we all know that period of time when it was like, oh, Theresa May's in her kitten heels and this and that. What about David Cameron's shoes? Did we ever, like, look at it? Nobody...
And can you imagine an article or even a comment online with someone congratulating Theresa May's husband, going, look at him, high five, he's made it. Like another man going, great for him, he's made it. Like, no, in a way, people probably are more likely to see, like,
oh, must be a bit emasculating for him being married to such a powerful woman. Like, I can imagine there's people...
It's like house husband syndrome.
Yeah, whereas, you know, the whole WAG culture as well, of like women who are kind of glorified and celebrated for being basically beautiful and being married to a man. You wouldn't get that in Flip.
And also, really. It really annoys me because it like plays into that narrative of like, don't worry, girls, if you fail and, you know, we won't give you an education. We don't really care about you because you can just marry well. It's like...
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's such a lesser, like, it's such a cop-out, I think. And
well, it doesn't help equality, does it? If we're sort of nurturing a mentality in which, oh, well, you don't have to be clever if you're a girl. If you've got looks, you can maybe do it without having...
And also, like, you know Bumble, that dating app, where it's like Tinder, but for girls, and you can... the girls have to make the first move. You can't get like horrible comments. Like you have to reach out to the man first. And on the buses at the moment, the tagline of the campaign is "Be the CEO your parents want you to marry." And it's all about like
I love that
taking on that role that actually would be successful in a man. And I absolutely love that because I just think like my sister, for example, is a very very beautiful girl. And sometimes people have made jokes like acquaintances of ours. They're just like, oh, just you know, get a rich husband and you'll be fine. And it's like. And it's a joke. It's funny. It's like culturally and socially, people say that all the time to people.
So my best friend, her daughter is my goddaughter, and she's got a sister as well. And whenever someone says to them, "Oh, yours," because they're gorgeous girls, and whenever someone says, which people tend to, you know, when they meet them for the first time, "Oh God, aren't you both gorgeous? Aren't you both beautiful?" My friend will make sure she adds, "And aren't you both smart? Or aren't you both confident?" Or something like that. To try and counter that, but I think what you were saying...
No one makes that comment about me, like, I should marry well.
but I think what you were saying there, Emma, about, you know, the idea of marrying well, again, even deeper than that, it goes down to the idea of what you were saying, which is women still are congratulated and celebrated for being basically beautiful.
Beautiful, yeah.
And yet, okay, you will, of course, yeah, like, men get that too. Like, men can be objectified and called sexy and hot, but they're not congratulated for being really hot and marrying successful women. Like Serena Williams' partners, I don't know much about them. They're not talked about. They're not focused on during her matches. Like, they're certainly, like, not congratulated just for being with her. I don't know.
Looking at the date because it's we're recording this on September the 28th. And Hugh Hefner died today.
Did he?
Yeah. So that's sort of, he's the ultimate, obviously sad when anyone dies. But he is the poster sort of example of, like, by association, women felt successful by being with him.
Yeah, end of an era.
Yeah, definitely end of an era, yeah. Really interesting.
So why do we think that we still do that? And I think women do it too. And actually, Connie, I kind of wanted to hear your thoughts on this as well, because you have the experience of not only being a woman who's achieved a lot and who's been known in her own right for her achievements, but has also... then married someone who is successful and known in different circles, perhaps, and for different things as well. And do you find that you've been either objectified or judged or kind of labelled as the wife? Or how's that experience
for you? It's funny because we were chatting about this before, and we both have friends in common, Gia. And she's married to Brian Cox, Professor Brian Cox. And she did this whole thing about how annoying it is when you're introduced as like blah blah's wife.
Mm.
And because your partner is also in the limelight, do you get that much? Like where you're introduced as like this is Noel's girlfriend.
Yeah, but you know what? I also because Gia's article, she wrote this one. I thought it was a fantastic article. And she, again, it was that split. So someone like Melania Trump, who looks very kind of like a lot of men's wet dream, basically, of what a gorgeous wife should look like you know, beautiful body, blah, 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 all the rest of it. I don't fit that mold. I don't think Gia fits that mold.
That's
no, but
subjective.
It's listen. There's,
I'm not. I mean, I would disagree.
Listen, I definitely don't fit the mold. And Gia, who I think is stunningly attractive,
she's
not a, you know, 32 double E blonde, you know, she's not that kind of we don't look like trophy wise.
Often people are thinking like you're saying you don't fit that mold, because often, especially in certain sections of society, that mold is thought of as someone that's blonde.
Yeah,
sort of very blonde and
but
very...
a bit Jessica Rabbit weird thing.
But funny. I don't want to fit.
Although she's got red hair, but it's that.
Don't want to fit that mold. But what was interesting is that so someone like you, Melania Trump, who looks a certain way, will be very much celebrated. And you know, you've got like a lot of footballers' wives who look a certain way and will be kind of often talked about in their, you know, have articles and articles about them and be pictured a lot. And Gia was saying, like, from her point of view, so she's a wife and they've been married for a long time, and she's gorgeous and she's a successful woman in her own right. But she gets treated as the invisible wife. So when she's with Brian and they are photographed, and I've had this as well, she'll be described, Brian Cox and friend. You know, they've been married forever, or, you know, together for however long. But she's still treated as the invisible kind of wife, and people don't really have that kind of respect for their relationship. And I've had that a lot.
Smart.
I've been described as plus friend and things like that. And I don't mind at all. It doesn't bother me. But it's interesting how, depending on what you look like, you'll be treated very differently as the wife or girlfriend of someone. You went recently to LA.
Yes.
With Charlie. And congratulations
on
the
Emmys.
Yes,
you won 2 Emmys. It's amazing. Which is totally like...
Which is fantastic. And I saw an article and it was like, Connie Huck at the Emmys. What a surprise. And I just thought, I just found it really... kind of disrespectful and offensive. It was like, why wouldn't you be there, obviously, number one? And secondly, like, I don't know, I just sort of, the tone of it I found really kind of just sort of diminishing your own achievements as a successful woman. And I just think that's that the people have a tendency to do that to the partners of
It's all about, oh, and she was wearing this dress, or whereas if I was a husband of someone, it wouldn't matter what I was wearing, probably because it would be just another tux. But the point being, it's what you were saying of like Melania is scrutinised in a completely different way from Theresa May's husband.
And I've seen Melania talked about on Twitter as well, people saying like, I'm so proud to have a beautiful and graceful first lady finally in the White House. And I just thought, well, first of all, really, like, have you seen Michelle?
I don't find that inspiring in any way.
Exactly.
But what I thought was interesting is I couldn't help but make a comparison to like someone like Kim Kardashian, but in a different way, because she's made her own success. She's sort of done a similar Melania thing, like coming from a situation where she didn't have lots of money and she's used her sexuality to then get really famous. But she's married to Kanye West, but I don't think that she was famous before. Mm. She was her own person before. And even though I don't look at Kim Kardashian and think, oh, I want that life, or I don't really find her a role model in any way personally, I can't help but think, well, at least it was on her terms.
Mm-hmm.
And at least she used her body and her looks and all of her sexuality and all the rest of it to get successful. But she did all of that herself, actually.
Mm.
Do you agree?
I mean, she did do it all herself. If she'd married Kanye first and done all that,
it would be a Melania move.
Yes, that's the thing. But then, in a weird way, both sort of paths are kind of the same. It's just the order is different. Mm,
very true.
And I think also, though, it's important to say, like, I don't think Melania's done... I don't know, obviously. She could be an amazing woman. She could be a terrible woman. Who knows? It's hard to tell. I don't think she's done anything wrong by... marrying someone who she's married, and you know, well, other than the fact that I can't imagine why she'd want to marry him, but you know, she's not to be criticized for doing that, but it's more like she's also not to be congratulated for having like done that, for being like now successful, because I don't think marrying someone or being married to someone is should be seen as like an aspirational successful thing to
it's
do.
It's like
in
this
life.
This is controversial, but I'm gonna say it. So when people get engaged, and on Facebook they get 500 comments and congratulations. I've always thought
like, is getting engaged or getting married, is it an achievement? Because society does congratulations, well done on getting married.
And do men get the same congratulations, do you think, than women on an engagement?
So.
Do you think?
Maybe. Yeah, I think it's so. But, and I, that's not saying, like, I think marriage is a beautiful thing and I love weddings.
You know
but it's
what
just
I
like,
think?
I don't think it should be.
I think it's because it's the term congratulations. So if it's your birthday, people say happy birthday. There isn't an equivalent term for getting engaged. So people say congratulations. Because it's, it would be weird if they weren't happy engagement or, you know, it doesn't quite...
So we need a new term.
Yeah, actually. We've got quite a few new terms to put out there.
There was that episode of Sex
in the
City.
It's only because if one of my friends gets a promotion,
yeah,
she'll get like two comments, well done. But engagement, oh, like that well done you. And I just find like we should congratulate people on, you've got a new, you've bought yourself a house, wow. You've got an engagement, cool. You've got a job promotion. Yeah. Or maybe you've just come out of a really bad time in your life. It's just like
maybe
the
we should
weight...
congratulate people on divorce. Because you've got away from that horrible
well, they
part
have divorce parties now, don't they? People throw divorce parties. Yeah.
It's just interesting the weight that we give as a society
but I think,
on engagement and marriage. Like it is an achievement.
I think we still see there's various like markers of like successful life. One is like a successful career, and we still see one as like having a successful partnership and having a family, like and being able to balance and have those three. I mean, maybe there's more than that. I'm being particularly narrow, but there was an episode of Sex and the City. I don't know if you guys saw it, but Carrie Bradshaw got fed up of going to like was it baby showers
everyone else's stuff where each time she'd buy them a wedding gift.
A wedding
gift,
and it was really expensive. And she was like, I'm gonna throw myself a party and I'm gonna marry myself. And I want presents, and I want you to spend $200 on, to, you know, transport and hotel and presents and all the rest of the, you know, outfits and everything else. And everyone was dropped. It was quite an interesting point of, you know, why a single woman not allowed to have a celebratory, or single men, a celebratory moment of like, I've done well in life. I have a career I love. I'm enjoying my life.
Yeah, and
celebrate
lots of people these days don't want marriage and don't want kids. So surely if they have marriage and have kids, that's a failure. If that's not what they want. Do you see what I mean? I'm just flip reversing
it. So maybe we should have like a kind of like just yay to life celebration. Yeah. Like when you get to a certain point, you're like, do you know what? Just yay to my life.
Well,
I'm doing really well.
Really, and this is going to sound really sort of happy clappy, but it should be just measured on happiness. Because really, all you can want in life is happiness. That encompasses everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, and sort of to, I guess, why am I being devil's advocate today? Normally I'm not the one, but
do it.
Just,
I love it. I love this time
to, just, I know, I'm coming out today. But to flip it, people listening might think, if Melania, from the day she was born, her success in life was, I want to marry someone really rich and I want to be someone who was hanging off the arm of a really, really rich, powerful man. So maybe in Melania's book, she's actually achieved what she wanted to achieve.
But, and I agree with that in a way, and that's personal, and that's fine. And if she at night goes to bed and thinks, well done me, this is exactly what I've always wanted, then bully for her, that's great, I'm happy for her. But for someone in a position of, you know, have to have a platform like Boy George to tweet about that and say, isn't her path inspirational? Well, when you're talking about inspirational, you're talking about other people seeing that and being inspired by it. And I definitely don't think it's an inspirational message we should be promoting, even if it is inspirational secretly, to some people. Like, I don't think it's a message we should be sharing to especially young girls, that that is something to be applauded.
Like, but is like it inspirational to a young girl that doesn't look blonde and like, you know, the Donald Trump dream trophy wife? You know, that's not an inspiration to them. They're just thinking, well, I'll never be able to.
But hopefully it's not to even people who do look like
that. But
like,
that's it's not inspiration in any way, really, to anyone.
It's fine. Like, you shouldn't judge people. You know, there is nothing wrong with choosing to, you know, if you are married and you're married to someone want to be a housewife or want to just stay at home, whatever, I don't think there should be any judgment against that.
I'll tell you where it is inspirational, to think that if you're stuck in circumstances that you don't have to be in those circumstances forever. But it doesn't mean you have to marry a rich man. It means that you can study and maybe make a success. There's many different paths to get out of that.
Exactly.
But you don't have to be stuck where you're at. There is hope. That's as far as the inspiration goes.
I suppose so.
As opposed to following her path.
In which case, Connie and Emma, I apologise, Boy George, for my
Twitter
row with you.
We don't know how he meant it. We don't know what he meant.
And we don't know whether she's going to divorce him, like,
and get, you know, we don't know her game plan.
Yeah.
Oh, it's getting dark now.
She might have the last lot.
No, maybe we'll cut that out. joke.
Legal disclaimer.
Thank you so much, Connie.
Pleasure. A brilliant guest. Thanks for having me.
We've got it all off our breasts and feel lighter.
Yeah, me too.
We'll float up towards the ceiling any moment now.
My breast feels non-existent.
It's gone down a cup size.
Thank you so much to Connie Huck. It's been another brilliant episode, we think. Anyway, we've had fun. Hope you did too. If you are enjoying the Get It Off Your Breast podcast, please do click subscribe wherever you're listening so that you make sure you don't miss any episodes. And you won't want to miss next week because we'll be joined by Monroe Bergdorf.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.